Hi dear listeners.
You're listening to Radio Revolt,
a show in which migrants and asylum seekers deal with a very complex topic of migration.
We are people with international history who come together to gain empowerment throughout doing community radio.
This is 92.6 Radio Helsinki.
Dear listeners, we are back in the studio again.
Welcome back to Radio Revolt. Your host, Fatih Kalkan speaking. In the last program, we have talked about the main opposition party, CHP, role in the changing context of Turkish politics. Even though many people expect me to make a program mainly focusing on the current government politics and the current government party, the most important reason I wanted to make a program about the opposition party in Turkey is that democratic rule of governance is not only exclusive to state governance, but it is also very much, I believe, linked with the governance of any political entity in a country. When we deeply search and demand for democratic rule of governance from the ruling elites or from the governments, most of the times we intend to overlook the democratic deficit in the opposition parties and the organizational structure of the opposition party. When a country is moving towards more authoritarian type of governance, opposition parties or elites in the opposition parties could also follow that example. If there is a one-man rule in a country, the opposition party, the opposition leader, would also want to design his own party in a similar way. But in today's program, we are going to talk about something different. We are going to talk about the international and geopolitical conflicts in the East Mediterranean region. Despite the fact that East Mediterranean region was one of the most ancient trade routes in the history, today this region is coincided with ongoing bilateral conflicts between regional countries. In order to portray, visualize the conflicts in a much understandable way, I divided conflicts into multiple layers so that you can have a good overview of the evolving complex problems in the region. The first layer I would like to talk about is the discovery of the new energy sources in the East Mediterranean region, which comes to early 1990s. But it became that this new energy sources became a problem in the last decade. The distribution of these energy resources among regional countries brought about a significant controversy, especially between Greece and Turkey. In 2020, Greece, Israel, Cyprus, and Egypt agreed on a short natural gas pipeline directly connecting all the energy sources in the East Mediterranean to the mainland Greece via Cyprus and Crete Island. This project, called EastMed project, disregard Turkey in the region. Even though the project failed to come to succeed, Turkey has already felt contained by the regional countries and took assertive steps such as searching for energy sources in a gray zone and show more active military presence in the East Mediterranean region. The second layer we need to know about the region, the conflicts in the region, is the long-standing bilateral issues between Turkey and Greece. As these two countries have not solved any existing bilateral issues with each other, quite oppositely, contrarily, they gained a new problem by the advent of each decade. If we just briefly look into the history of the relations, in the early 1960s, Greece began restricting the rights of the Turkish Muslim minority in Western Thrace as a reaction, prompting Turkey to retaliate by curbing the rights of the Greek Orthodox minority in Istanbul. In the early 1970s, Turkey's military intervention into Cyprus led to the island's division and contributed to militarization of the Aegean Sea, which was forbidden by the Lausanne Treaty 1923. During the 1980s and 1990s, disputes over territorial waters and continental shelf rights emerged in various parts of the Aegean Sea. Continental shelf rights and the territorial waters, these two are the concepts or terms in the international law. You don't need to know exactly, but these two terms are important through which these two countries, Greece and Turkey, share energy sources in the region. As a third layer, we need to underline the centrality of Cyprus issue in the region. Since Turkey's military intervention in 1974, the Cyprus island divided into two different governments. In the northern part, Turkish supported administration declared its independence in 1983. However, it was not recognized by the international community. In the southern part, there is a Greek Cyprus government which has been recognized internationally and became member of the European Union in 2004. The vague political future in Cyprus island leading further geopolitical tensions in the region. The Greek-Cyprus government's military and energy cooperation with Israel and Greece has been regarded as a containment strategy against Ankara. On the other hand, Ankara is taking militarily and strategically assertive steps to break this isolation and search for diplomatic cooperation with Arab states. So, considering these three complex layers in the region, there is a high risk of military escalation among regional countries. In the international relations discipline, there is a term which is called security dilemma. It means that whereas state actions to increase its own security by investing its own defense mechanisms and capabilities can be perceived as a threat by other states. The rising military defense industry in Turkey leads to fear among Greek political elites. Similarly, Israel's military presence in the region encouraged Ankara to be more assertive in the region. This vicious circle of the security dilemma among regional countries making any diplomatic peace attempt excruciatingly difficult to succeed. Today, in order to discuss all these issues, I have invited a distinguished academician, Zuhal Mert Uzuner. She is professor at the Department of Political Science and International Relations at the Marmara University. In her studies, she focuses on Greek-Turkish relations, Greek-Turkish foreign policies, and East Mediterranean. Professor Uzuner, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. So I would like to start with the East Mediterranean conflict. As we approach the year 2020, discovery of new energy resources first identified in early 1990s sparked a significant controversy among regional countries. The region has long been marked by a series of maritime disputes, more particularly the long-standing tensions between Greece and Turkey. In addition to these bilateral conflicts, the discovery of energy resources added a new layer of geopolitical competition between Greece, Turkey, and Israel. So, can you make elaboration for us how these energy sources unfolded in early 2020s?
Thanks for your kind invitation. It's a pleasure to join today. Actually, this Eastern Mediterranean conflict has many different dimensions. As you mentioned, it did not start at the beginnings of the 2020s. Actually, it goes beyond. There are several regional conflicts between different countries of the region, and we can expand it to today's conflict. So the details are becoming much more problem problematic year by year. So when we come to 2020, we have unfortunate developments in the Eastern Mediterranean, especially between Greece, Turkey, and Egypt, and some other, let's say, closer regional actors, such as the United Arab Emirates and sometimes Saudi Arabia. We can see these actors started to engage more and more into this much more bilateral problems. So the Eastern Mediterranean as a sub-region emerged as a very important hot spot in geopolitical considerations. So energy is a part of that, but it's not maybe the most important part. We need to underline it. As a connected region to Middle Eastern, let's say the political confrontation, this region has also very much geopolitical, the way of thinking about the unresolved problem. So from that perspective, energy is considered much more related with liberal international framework. That means, you know, the energy and other economic cooperation matters were considered as a mean to overcome some problems and concentrating on a mutual benefit of both actors or the many actors in the region. That's why finding energy in the region was considered a very critical and very positive development at the beginning. But later it is observed that this geopolitical framework existing in the region, which is dominating all other political approaches of these different actors, it was very obvious that it's not so easy to overcome the problems from this liberal international perspective. That's why energy by itself could not create a dynamism for the resolution of the problems. Best example was observed in case of Lebanese Israeli agreement. It was considered as very critical resolution attempt because, as you know, Hezbollah as an actor was not recognized and not considered as a good actor by Israeli politicians. But at the end, from indirect mechanisms, which were used very practically by diplomatic mechanisms, helped for reaching out such kind of resolution. And that resolution was going beyond the limitations of international law. So, but what happened later, we observed that the regional security or the conflictual issues challenged this agreement. What happened later about the attacks of Israel to Hezbollah actors, especially about Palestinian issue or the Iranian influence in the region, showed that energy issue by itself is not so, let's say, the easing actor or erasing or decreasing the importance of geopolitical and security considerations. Because, you know, at the end you sign an agreement with Lebanon, and at the end it was depending on a high level of need, economic resource for Hezbollah and Lebanese government. That was the reason, but it did not help finding out a common ground and continuity of this relationship between these two actors.
So it's quite interesting to hear the case of the Lebanese and Israel agreement. And then, as you said, in the liberal theories, we believe that the economic cooperation, energy cooperation, sharing the energy resources would lead to a peace full era for regional countries, but it's just turning the other way around in the region. But I would like to take your focus into more the Turkish foreign policy. So I would like to mention a policy paper published by the Istanbul Policy Center. So this paper highlights that in the context of the Eastern Mediterranean, Turkey's assertive stance in defending its interests has been driven by two main frustrations from Turkish side. First, the Turks believe that the Turkish Cypriots are being excluded from the potential energy sources in the region. And the secondly, perception that other Mediterranean states are pursuing a containment strategy aimed at limiting Turkey's regional influence. Do you agree with the view that Turkish Cypriots and Turkey have been excluded from potential energy resources and that a deliberate containment policy has been designed by other Mediterranean states against Turkey?
It's sure that there is a common, the stance in regional actors against Turkey. When you look at the development developments by starting from the let's say the beginning of the 2010s, we can observe that there are the high level of efforts for the regional cooperation, especially against the Turkish initiatives. We observe that the rising tension between Turkey and Israel started to provoke some other alternative cooperation in the region. We know that Turkish-Israeli cooperation was very central for the security consideration of Israel, and that was considered in the framework of the Turkey's Western oriented foreign policy. And actually, it was not directly the result of maybe the, you know, the U.S.-Turkish relations. We should not undermine the importance of this cooperation, because both countries had a higher level of, let's say, the sensitivities and let's say the priorities given to the anti-terrorism and fighting against terrorism. These were very important, let's say, the drive of this cooperation. But step by step, we can see the changing international atmosphere. It's not just because of Turkey and just because of Israel, maybe, but the international order started to change and open up some space for different actors. And we started to see this failing states in the region, and it created emergence of new actors and disorder. As a result of this situation, we can see this both actors, Israel and Turkey, started to compete for these new opened, let's say, the zones, which can be considered as a kind of guarantee zone for their security. From this approach, we can see that, let's say, the very critical. And also for the sea, we can see the similar case, especially for Turkish foreign policy. We must underline Cyprus is very, very, very central issue, and nobody should not expect any kind of let's say the high level of, let's say, the concession from the Cyprus stance of Turkey for this the strategic consideration about the region. First, I should underline that yes, energy is a connected matter with Cyprus question. At the end, we can see that Greek Cypriot government started to make several memorandum of understandings and agreements with several actors, which could be considered as a kind of balancing actor, balancing power against Turkey's influence in the region. Why? Because at the end, according to them, according to Greek Cypriot approach, Turkey is an invader in the island and must be pushed out of the island. And how it must be realized? So that is very, very much, let's say, the realistic calculation of, let's say, the power politics. From that approach, they were actually using this energy issue. And another thing was that at the end of the 2000s, we see a high level of economic crisis, and economic resources started to be considered very valuable for Greek Cypriots and also Greeks in Greece. So, yes, about Cyprus issue, we can see a high level of sensitivities for Turkish foreign policy, but it is not just related with 2000s. We need to go back, and it is much more geopolitical consideration. So the, any kind of economic benefit in the region can overcome this strategic consideration. And it is not only for Turkey, I need to underline. It is the same for many other actors. It is the same for Israel. I think it's not just for related with economic benefit. It's a kind of breathing opening, let's say, opening for the to the world for having, the, let's say, the fresh air. At the end, they are considering themselves much more surrounded by Arab states and hostile actors inland. So the sea, controlling sea, started to be considered very, very critical. From that point, we can see that the declining or, let's say, the deteriorated relationship between Turkey and Israel created a new incentive for Israel to go back to, let's say, the Eastern Mediterranean as a sea zone for this, let's say, the having this, let's say, the free zone from any kind of security the challenge. So the Greek Cypriot government cooperation with them started to be considered very, very critical, and it is a kind of challenge against Turkey. We need to underline that, and this is very tense and very dangerous game, I need to underline, because as I mentioned before, this is very sensitive issue for Turkish foreign policy. Mm-hmm. It cannot be compared with Syria, and I think also Syria is going much more important every day for Turkish foreign policy. I need to mention that too. Another issue, containing the other actors. Yes, Turkish capacity started to increase in the last decades. We need to underline that. It is not just because of Turkish intention to become bigger actor. As I mentioned, came as a result of falling actors around Turkey. Mm-hmm. And it pushed Turkey to provide its own security for itself. So the containing issue was much more related with the new capacities of Turkey, especially with rising capacity in defense industry. And it was also related with its historical ties and capacities. This is much more related with the soft power abilities of Turkey. Maybe we should underline its importance too, because Turkey spends a lot of energy for soft power near abroad by opening up some schools, by creating some help for construction of schools and hospitals. So that was the base of this soft power. And all were considered negative by the competing actors. Not only Israel, we can see the similar one for Greek case, because any kind of cooperation with Albania could be considered as a kind of containment. But it is the same for Turkey, because what is offered to Turkey with Sevilla map in Eastern Mediterranean is a kind of, let's say, the attempt to disregard the rights mm-hmm. of Turkish people in this region, as a people in the region, to use the economic resources in this geography. That's why, yes, containment is a matter, but it is not directly intention of these actors, especially Turkish, maybe because the highest mm-hmm. capacity country in the region was Turkey, and it created an opportunity for mm-hmm. Turkish Republic.
Yeah, as you underlined, the insecurity in Greece and Israel somehow letting these actors to contain Turkey. And on the other hand, we see that Turkey is becoming much more assertive in retaining its own interest in the region. So when I was just reading a lot about the conflicts in East Mediterranean, I just realized that there is a complete different picture between the Black Sea and the East Mediterranean Sea. In the Black Sea, Turkey has successfully established a functioning modus operandi with all the riparian states. State. Ankara's strategy in the region emphasized regional ownership, multilateralism, and balancing act that no regional country in the Black Sea would be a dominant power. In contrast, Turkey's policy in the Mediterranean highlights a key challenge: Ankara's perception of being excluded from regional decision-making processes, and it in response, it resulted in a central tenet of Turkish foreign policy, which means that asserting its interests both on the ground and at the table. But this approach also brings us to the widely discussed concept of the strategic autonomy. Today, in the international relations, we are mostly talking about the strategic autonomy, how countries can become a strategic autonomy, gain strategic autonomy. In global politics, many states seek to act independently. With this in mind, to what extent can the Blue Homeland Doctrine be considered part of Ankara's broader strategic autonomy strategy?
Actually, yes. What we can see that happens today, especially about Blue Homeland Doctrine, is related with strategic autonomy framework. Mm-hmm. But first, maybe we need to refer the question's beginning part, what is related with this, the different situation in Black Sea and Aegean and the Eastern Mediterranean. Maybe it can be considered as very deterministic, but the geography is putting root here in this region. What kind of geography exists at the end? If we are talking about sharing seasons, you need some land. According to land pieces, you are defining your limitations, the seasons limitation. So in Black Sea, it is very easy. When you look at map, you can see a very slow, or let's say the easy coastal region of the, let's say the Republic of Turkey. And the other actors, they are the same. Maybe there's only one case went to international court between Romania. And so what is what was the main focus of this, the jurisdiction? It was again related with the position of the island. So islands are problem in the Aegean Sea. Islands, what kind of share they must have? International text and code says that islands may have or shall have this, let's say, the share according to let's say their, let's say, the status. They are part of this national land, so they may have the share. But it doesn't say anything about what kind of share it is. So if we are comparing mainland with island, you can see there are several different, let's say, the jurisdictions and decisions given by the, let's say, the International Court of Arbitration. So Aegean Sea, because of this existence of many different islands, very close to Turkish mainland, Anatolia, there is a huge discussion between Greece and Turkey. So if the audience do not know about this geographical region, I strongly advise them to look at the map, how close it is between some islands and the Anatolian mainland. You can sweep. So that's close region we are talking about. So how to create this standardized limits which were mainly designed for oceans. So it is a very difficult problem, but this is the main reason. So about Blue Homeland, it is not directly related with this very conflictual situation in Aegean Sea. What it said in Blue Homeland doctrine in Turkish foreign policy is more about a mental change. As you know, Turkey had the second largest army and most powerful army in this region in NATO. So it is not an army mainly depending on sea or air force. We are talking about a land army and a very crowded army and very much experienced army. In any kind of war, especially this, you know, the guerrilla warfare because of PKK fight for long years. And also with this additional capacity, which let's say the new capacities came with defense industry, we can see the rising power. But what is asked with Blue Homeland Doctrine here is more about adding a very powerful dimension for Turkey's new strategy. It is the naval power, sea power. And it is not only about navy, it is about maritime activities. What is the difference between naval and maritime activities? We need to underline it very boldly. Blue Homeland Doctrine is talking about transformation of the way of thinking, mentality, depending on more on, let's say, the sea powers, for example, Britain was an island state and they were depending on sea power and it carried them to be a global power. Why? Because seas are very fertile for transportation, and in a globalized world, in a world depending on trade, we see the importance of these seas. If you are a sea power and if you are powerful in seas, so your defense or your capabilities in your region will increase dramatically. So this is about the transformation of people's relationship with sea. Maybe opening up some schools for pupils, for having much more contact with sea. So this is not about a naval strategy. It is about transforming mentality to a sea power, to maritime power, a seafaring nation.
Yeah. You underlined that the Blue Homeland Strategy is the change of the mentality in Turkey. But when I just read all the foreign political articles about the issue, the Turkish foreign policy, but specifically Blue Homeland, regarded as an imperialistic project. It's an extension of the neo-Ottomanist foreign policy, and it has a huge amount of backlash from the academicians and scholars around the world. So how do you comment on this?
It is actually related with what is not answered in your the previous question. You were asking about its connection with strategic autonomy. When you look at the global politics in this region, Turkey was a smaller actor, had some roles given by the greater actors. Mm-hmm. As a part of Western alliance system, Turkey was considered as a lead power and had some mission, some roles, like, mm-hmm. you know, the parts of the body. Arms have a role and feet have a role. So this kind of organization exists in the minds of great actors for several regions. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's coming from its nature. I mean, as a great power, you are acting according to your own benefit first, not for the benefit of alliance. Mm-hmm. First of all, you are thinking globally, but this is a kind of undermining factor for the regional actors' interest. So what about Turkey's desire to be use the, let's say, the sea resources? Why Turkey should disregard its interest existing in sea? And this is not about state-centric approach. I'm talking about people's approach. As a Turkish person living in Antalya or living in any kind of sea zones, you can use several resources existing in speed. This is deriving from, let's say, coming from the nature of life and as the person living in a coastal city. So from these approaches, Turkey wants a share in this new, let's say, the efforts to create limits in seas. Mm-hmm. As you know, the exclusive economic zones as a new concept emerged very, let's say, newly when you compare it with continental shelf. So it is talking about how to utilize the seas for the fish resources or the other resources existing inside the sea. When you look at this sharing role, Greece was much more considered as a sea base, as a naval base in Eastern Mediterranean. So that was considered as a kind of, let's say, giving different roles. And from that approach, Greece wants bigger share and sometimes takes some more support from Western powers about this sea delimitation, the efforts. But Turkey has kind of rejection about that with this argumentation that in Eastern Mediterranean, when you look, there's only one small island in Eastern Mediterranean. Where is Eastern Mediterranean? The region after the Cretan Island and Rhodes Island. So there's only one small island, very small. When you look at map, you will have difficulty to see Mace. So Turkey wants a just share from the sea resources as a very crowded country in the region. So this must be understood. Mm-hmm. But from the strategic autonomy perspective, it is considered like a kind of rebel or uprising in the system, which is given a different role. In this frame, Turkey wants to have a much more powerful navy in the region, and it is. When you look at the power capacity of Turkey today, it is very powerful in the region. So that is considered as a kind of challenge. And when you start to have some conflicts with regional actors on the basis of defending some rights, which is considered just and legitimate according to the ruling groups, it became a problem in the framework of this global and regional calculations of greater actors.
You underlined the people's dynamic in the Turkey's assertive stance that the people living in Turkey also should get some benefits from the exclusive economic zone territorial waters. You underline it's not only a military or state-centric attitude from Turkey. And also it was really important that you underlined the strategic autonomy dimension of Turkey, that 20 years ago Turkey was much more collaborating with the regional and the global actors to define its own role in the region. Right now, even major actors like the United States just redrawing from their role in the region and in global stance, and somehow Turkey needs to fill the gaps in the region in order to defend its own interests. But on the other hand, sometimes in the foreign articles, Turkey's assertive stance has been regarded as a imperialist, neo-Ottomanist. There are so many articles published about this. Now, I would like to take our focus to Greek-Turkish relations. I think
the main conflicts in the East Mediterranean also deriving from this strong tenet. So I would like to start with the current discussion and F-35. I guess it's so much popular in Turkish media that Turkey really wants to get the F-35 and rid of the Gaza sanctions. But I would like to more focus on the Greece-Turkish relations. So Greece's accusation of F-35 fighter jets has contributed to a somehow security dilemma between the two countries. For the first time in a long while, Greece's air defense capabilities have gained a significant superiority over those of Turkey. Meanwhile, due to the S-400 missile system purchase, Turkey was removed from the F-35 program, and also it received the Gaza sanctions, which further widened the gap between in aerial capabilities. But on the other hand, as you know, the Turkey has intensified its effort to strengthen its air and land forces through domestic military production, particularly in artillery and defense system. Given this context, to what extent has the East European region been impacted by the security dilemma between Greece and Turkey?
Security dilemma, as you know, as a concept used for, let's say, the actors who are trying to secure themselves and other actors, and they are buying more and more weapons and the artilleries against other, and it may provoke the others more, let's say, the armament. So this is a kind of vicious circle. So here in Greek-Turkish case, this is not only related with the latest, let's say, the decades. We can see it is a kind of the general trend. There is a huge level of distrust. We must underline its existence from the very, let's say, settled the approach existing in Turkish literature and the widely shared by the bureaucracy. As Greece is always trying to utilize international contacts to move all the other actors against Turkey and decrease the importance of or the priorities of, let's say, the Turkish foreign policy, the expectations. That's why there is always a kind of sensitivity about what our Greek diplomats are trying to do. So this is much more deeply related with the grand national discourse, grand national narrative. So it is related with the othering, the other actor. I mean, for especially Greeks, Turks' image is very problematic. And it is very difficult to challenge it in Greek politics. I may give you several examples. When we look at its impact on Eastern Europe, maybe the best example is about SAFE, this new initiative for European defense against any probable Russian aggression. So you can see Turkey is very much positive about that, wants to contribute, and started to make some very serious economic corporations and buying very, very important defense industry companies, as the case of this Italian company, Piaggio. These are very important steps. But from a very practical point of view, from a very European point of view, these must be considered positive by Greek diplomats. But it is negative when you look at the discourse. And today, when you look at the Greek foreign policy priorities, let's say, excluding Turkey from any kind of European mechanism, defense mechanism, is very central. Why? Because it may block this utilization of all these contacts, diplomatic alliances against Turkey for the benefit of Greek interests in region. So this is the reason. So whatever we say, something positive and some good intentions about good relationship between Greek and Turkish people, and I'm a very strong supporter of this feeling, we must understand this is existing in state bureaucracy. How to overcome is a very, very problematic issue. And it is also a very difficult question for European countries, because they need Turkey and Turkish production, especially for a defense industry.
Yeah, as you explained, there's a huge, significant distrust between Greece and Turkey. So when I look into the history of the Greek-Turkish relations, I just realized that each decade we have another substantial issue going through these relations. In early 1960s, Greece began restricting the rights of the Turkish Muslim minority in Western Thrace. Thrace prompting Turkey to retaliate by curbing the rights of the Greek Orthodox minority in Istanbul. In early 1970s, Turkey's military intervention in Cyprus led to the island's division and contributed to the militarization of the Aegean Sea. During the 1980s, 1990s, we have witnessed the disputes over territorial waters and continental shelf rights. And in the last two decades, the long-standing issues, maritime issues, gas exploration in Gulf contested or gray zone, worsening tensions over territorial waters and both sides expanding their defense capabilities. But how I understand is that this appears to be more than just a power struggle between two neighborhood countries. It seems to me that it's a reflection of deeper competition between two ambivalent geopolitical identities, shaped by nationalism, historical narratives, and religion. As you describe, the grand national narrative discourse from Greece and the strong distrust against the Turkish military, somehow feeding and making those issues difficult to solve. You a bit explain? I just want to a bit, get into that. How do you view the core nature essence of the bilateral conflicts between Greece and Turkey that for almost 100 years, there's always a new problems, but no solutions just coming? What is the essence of the problem as you describe? Is it the grab national narratives or psychological distress against a nation?
Actually, what you said last is very critical. This what you feed in the people's mind is very important. When we look at the contemporary political discussions and international agenda, you can see it's so important to underline the importance of memory, how you remember what happened and how happened and how much it is emotionally positive or negative for you. Actually, these are taught through the education, media, or novels, or films, movies. So we are facing every day about this issue. And especially with the rise of this telecommunication technology and social media, we start to talk about this information, how it is very dominant and important field of, the fight and conflict today. So actually, it is related with knowing and how we know. It's a very epistemological discussion. Mm-hmm. At the end, it's very difficult to change it. Mm-hmm. We always say in international relations, constructivism is very attractive, very good. Everything is a construct. There is nothing to taken as given as we can see in nature, like kind of a rock. So what is state is not something like a rock. So it can redefine and change its definition and meaning. But on the other side, we know that when they are defined, it's very difficult to change it. Uh-huh. There are different examples. For example, when you start to change this for decreasing any kind of conflict, chill situation in your countries, you may start from history books, how you define these other actors. There were several initiatives in between Greece and Turkey, and it was very difficult. I remember many different cases and many very open-minded politicians in Greece had severe difficulties as a result of their intentions to change the words from an editing one to a neutral one, much maybe not putting this negative one in front of any another word, another name. So changing the wording created by itself a kind of problem. Mm-hmm. And it is, if you let's say, worry on these things and the source of soil of your identity, it is very difficult to reshape it. And there are some other people trying to find a solution to that in many different countries. I gave always as an example, maybe not connected directly with Turkish relations, but Hrant Dink, as you know, as a very critical, very important the intellectual he was, and unfortunately he is murdered by the suspicious, the person. But at the end, what he was arguing about the Armenian deportation period, and you know the Armenian diaspora had a very important the argument and demand for the recognition of all these happenings as genocide. So he was arguing that Hrant Dink, he was arguing that look, if we focused on these negative feelings as the source of our identity, it will also poison us. So maybe we should find other resources to construct identity on it, not on hatred on another group of people. So if we look at this Greek-Turkish dispute, it is very difficult now to discuss. We are very far away from that point, and maybe we should underline the dynamics of politics. This is also very critical. You know, we are in the age of rising populism. Once when we were observing rise of, the Podemos and, the Tsipras in Greece, all these were very, promising for many people about discussing economic problems seriously, not depending on migrants or the nationalist explanations. So, but what happened? We are now again in times of a high level of nationalism and very strange arguments about migrants and very nationalist and populist discourse rising in the world. So, in that kind of atmosphere, we can see similar trends in Turkey and Greece. But always it has in the rest of the world happened in Greece and Turkey.
Yeah, I was in Armenia in this July. I am for a summer school, so I just talked with the many Armenian students and the distinguished professors, and I was a bit pretty shocked at how they were focusing on the recognition of Armenian genocide, and I was shocked that the recognition of Armenian genocide is the main pillar of Armenian national identity. And a professor was saying that if we Armenians just only focusing on the recognition of Armenian genocide, and if Turkey somehow accepts it, and then what is remaining for the rest of the Armenian national identity? Where is the Armenian language, traditions, the customs? So it's just
a good question.
It is as the Hrant Dink explained. It's a very poisonous situation. But I want to still move on with the Greek-Turkish relations. So in IR, there's a compartmentalization concept that the practice of separating different aspects of bilateral problems. The aim is to prevent conflicts in one area from spilling over or negatively affecting cooperation in other areas. So we have seen the employment of this strategy. Do you think this strategy remains valid in today's context, or do you think there is a need for both states to develop new, more comprehensive approaches to managing these conflicts and their relations?
Actually, there are many reasons to change the preferences in foreign policy. One of them may be this one, but it is very maybe minor when you compare other things. Maybe as the best example, we may start from the current Turkish-Greek dialogue. I don't say rapprochement because it's not a rapprochement. It's far away from rapprochement. How we reach out this position from 2020 is because, as you know, 2020, we face with this Kemal Reis and Limnos frigate accident. It's not an accident. Like, it was a kind of serious military confrontation, naval confrontation in sea. At the end, what we see, both sides are in field with their ships and naval ships. So this is a naval confrontation, actually, not only Turkish naval operation to any kind of field. It was the bilateral situation. So how we came from this point to today, at the end, and at that time, there was an international atmosphere much more free from this Russian threat. Well, okay, in Crimea, there was an occupation, but it was a relatively frozen conflict, and the Eastern Mediterranean was rising new hot points. So how to deal with it was a very serious problem, and Greek politics was considering that it's time to push more diplomatically and also in field with many different military partnerships, like French-Greek partnership. It is totally against NATO mentality. And you can see all military deployment in region against Turkey. So in from that point, how the situation transformed to today is related with the emergence of Russian invasion in Ukraine. So it changed dramatically geopolitical situation. It reminds that everybody, especially global actors, Turkey is a very strategic ally in the region for balancing or for finding a kind of, let's say, method or strategy to maybe not solve, but a kind of, let's say, the tool, very valuable tool in the region as an ally. So how you may disregard it in the region. So it changed the system. And if you remember, all the NATO, let's say, the secretary and other actors were coming to Turkey, Ankara, to negotiate what will happen. So it changed dramatically the system from non-existence of any kind of dialogue and blaming Turkey as a kind of black sheep or a kind of the negative actor in the region. So Turkey started to be again a kind in a very important NATO ally. Mm-hmm. So in that frame, we see change of relations in Greek-Turkish relations. It is not because, okay, now the tension is very high, let's make it easy and let's continue with a better and rational path. No, that was not the reason. We need to understand it. And at the end of this, several visits came from many different states and international organizations. We saw the Greek prime minister visited Ankara. Okay, so these are very strategic to underline the issue. And also when we look at the contemporary relations, it's very limited. It's like a kind of freeze the conflict, maybe keeping the dialogue, but this dialogue is not for finding solution. So because solutions are depending on concession, you need to give concession to find a way, okay, a solution. It is not only for Greek side, for Turkish side, it is the same. But how much you want to do that? This is the key question. I'm talking about rise of populism and rise of this national discourse everywhere. And also today we are talking about returning back to the, let's say, the ages before international law. So in this kind of atmosphere, usage of power and again conquering different regions started to be discussed like something normal. So in this kind of age, what you expect? So that's why we can see that is not a kind of serious rapprochement. This is just leaving all these things to the time, waiting for the perfect time, maybe for negotiate, not for solution. Because what is defined as solution in the minds of the actors is what they want. So it is not a kind of solution.
I was planning to ask you for your final thoughts on the future of conflicts in the East Mediterranean and the Greek-Turkish relations. However, I would like to ask you instead that what is the most critical obstacle to resolving the conflicts in the East Mediterranean and the Turkish and Greek relations?
I think most important one is Cyprus. Why? Because existing Cyprus question is actually a frozen situation, as you know. It is a ceasefire situation and there is no solution for more than 50 years. So it is extremely long when you compare with the other conflicts. And there is no change in the position of both sides. So how to deal with it is a real problem, and especially with rising trends of usage of arms for the solution or finding solution, the political problems started to be a serious issue. And I'm afraid that especially with the rising tension between Greece and Israel is also another issue. And I can see that Greek Cypriot administration and the Greek politicians, some of them, not all of them, are thinking that maybe utilization of this atmosphere for finding a kind of military solution as it happened in Nagorno-Karabakh is the best way finding it. So this perspective is the most dangerous one. It may blow up the region, and it means a regional war inside NATO, and in this atmosphere it is a very serious threat against NATO and European security. So Europeans must find a solution to this approach. So Israeli politics in the region, you know, this adventurous approach and legitimization of use of all kinds of means for all kinds of political purposes can be a real source of problem for European politics. They must find a way to solve this approach and maybe put some kind of limitations on the Greek politics. Mm-hmm. I see that Greek politicians in Greece can see how dangerous thing is this, but I can't say the same thing for the Greek Cypriot politician.
In today's episode, my goal is to familiarize you with regional conflicts in the East Mediterranean. However, I realize that the conflicts in the region cannot be restrained among the regional countries, but shadow of the superpowers and international organizations like the United States, NATO, European Union are also quite impactful and important. Also, content of a single conflict, sometimes linked with the geopolitical and national identity of conflictual countries. As we wrap up today's episode, I do not want to visit again every single conflict. Rather, I would like to underline here most is that school books, newspaper, and how and through which and what we define our individual and national identity are quite impactful, since all these micro-social constructions reflect certain narratives which unites us and diverse us as a human being. These social constructions are invisible but so impactful, so that any change within these micro-social constructions would lead to perpetual peace in many regions in the world. You have listened to Fatih Kalkan. See you in the next show.
Hi, dear listeners.
You're listening to Radio Revolt,
a show in which migrants and asylum seekers deal with a very complex topic of migration.
We are people with international history who come together to gain empowerment throughout doing community radio.
This is 92.6 Radio Helsinki.
Dear listeners, we are back in the studio again.